Welcome to the WWE Podcast, your number one source for the latest in WWE news and straightforward analysis.
Are you ready to get this thing going?
Give me a hell yeah! I said give me a hell yeah!
Then let's get this show started right now.
All right, everybody, guys and girls, welcome back to another edition of the SmackDown Review right here on the WWE Podcast. As always, I'm your host, Michael Ritter. You can find me on Twitter at Michael5Ritter and on Instagram at MichaelRitter5. Also the host of the Football Function Podcast, available on all of the podcast platforms. So today we're going to be talking about the SmackDown that aired on November 19th, 2021 from Hartford, Connecticut. The go-home show for Survivor Series, a little bit better than the Raw show and a little bit better than last week's SmackDown in general. So I do think that this was a pretty good show. I'm impressed, I guess you can say, with how they led in, or I guess closed out the build to Survivor Series and led in to the Survivor Series pay-per-view. And the match is actually, the build sucks. Let's get that out of the way right now. We all know. They didn't talk about the pay-per-view, and they didn't mention anything that was going to be happening on the pay-per-view until, like, what, 2-3 weeks ahead? So that alone, you're setting yourself up for failure there. But despite all of that stuff, the actual match is just, in a nutshell, if you just look at the actual card itself, it's not terrible. I mean, just obviously the Charlotte Flair-Becky Lynch match, that match alone is going to make you want to watch that pay-per-view, and it's going to make it worth it. And I feel like they did a pretty good job this last week, both on Raw and SmackDown, getting you at least a little bit more interested in the Universal Champion versus WWE Champion match that they're going to have at Survivor Series as well. I mean, that's kind of how they ended the show on SmackDown. So that's how, or that's the last image you're going to see before the pay-per-view. So they did what they could do to try to make us interested in that. So I will give them credit there. I'm also excited to see the 5-on-5 elimination matches. Despite it being brand versus brand, I still appreciate the history behind all of it. I mean, I love 5-on-5 elimination matches from Survivor Series because I still remember the time in my life whenever I couldn't watch them. I only had to watch highlights, and now thankfully I've gone on the WWE Network to relive and rewatch some of the ones that I missed over the years. But back in my childhood, I wasn't able to watch all of these pay-per-views. I don't know about you guys, but it was a privilege whenever we actually got a pay-per-view at my house. So I really enjoyed the ones that I did get to watch, and I've referenced a few over the past few weeks, and just the duration of my being here on this show, I've mentioned Survivor Series and some of my favorite moments. But so I do appreciate the 5-on-5 elimination matches, and the nostalgia alone is enough to get me excited for it. But anyways, let's go ahead and continue on here and talk about what happened on SmackDown and get started on this SmackDown review. But speaking of the SmackDown review, I do want to kind of mention something to you guys really quickly here in the beginning of the show. You guys know I never miss. I've missed 1 week being on this show since I've been here, and it's been what, like, I don't even know how many weeks. It's been well over a year that I've been here hosting the SmackDown review for you guys, and I've missed 1 week because I had COVID back in January. So that's the only time I've missed. Well, next week I'm going to have to miss as well. I will be absent from the SmackDown review. However, I'm not going to leave you guys hanging. I'm not going to leave you high and dry and leave Matt wondering what the hell is going to happen with the SmackDown review, who's going to host it, and have to, you know, go and search to fill in, or maybe try to change his schedule to try to do it himself. No need for all that. I was able to avoid a crisis, and that is actually a little bit of a pun there, because I called on the crisis himself. Yes, that's right. The crisis mailbag caller, emailer, longtime listener of the show. He's actually substituted a couple times for Mimi Burris as well for the AEW review. Well, he is going to be joining the show next Friday. So a week from today, he's going to be doing the SmackDown review himself. I'm going to go ahead and give him the keys and let him take over. I'm actually going to be going to Oklahoma City with my mom and my family. I haven't done something like that, like taking a trip like with my actual family, since like 2008. So it's been a long time, and I'm actually going to take advantage of this. It's going to be like the Thanksgiving break type thing. So I'm going to go to Oklahoma City, spend a little bit of time with family, but I will have the crisis fill in here, and I know he's going to do a damn good job. That's why I asked him, because I have faith and what he'll bring to the table here on the show. And I'm actually excited to listen to it. So I cannot wait for that. And I know you guys will enjoy it as well. So let's get into the SmackDown review, shall we? And it starts off and it ends with Roman Reigns, the Universal Champion. So it's bookend with the big dog, the head of the table, Roman Reigns. But this one, it starts with the Bloodline. And they're out there and you see the throne and Xavier Woods' crown and his scepter. Everything is out there. His whole, you know, little gimmick, his costume, if you want to call it that, for winning King of the Ring. And they're out there talking about how Roman Reigns doesn't need that stuff. He's actually insulted. He's like, who set this up? Like, who is responsible for this? And Paul Heyman kind of points his fingers. And he actually mentions Brock Lesnar in this segment, which is weird. It's weird that they're still mentioning Brock Lesnar. But they don't really mention anything else about it. So we're not going to get into that. That's just something to kind of keep in the back of your mind. Because you know at some point it will be called back on. And there's a reason why Paul Heyman is saying that in the middle of his promos. Especially ones in the opening segment of the show when you know a lot of people are watching the show. So anyways. Roman Reigns doesn't like the fact that all this stuff is out in the ring. He doesn't like the fact that there is a crown and all that stuff because he doesn't feel like he needs any of that stuff. And Xavier Woods kind of comes out and he kind of makes a point in the same direction, I guess you can say, because he says, look, all that stuff that you have in the ring, that's literally my property, but I don't care because it's not like that stuff is what makes me the king. You know, like I won the King of the Ring tournament. And it's how you treat, he basically tried to spin it by saying how you treat the WWE Universe is what makes you a king. It doesn't matter what you're wearing or like clothes or anything like that. So it was a good little segment here. I did enjoy this. It was a good way to start the show. And eventually, you know, as the Usos are starting to disrespect the stuff even more, Roman Reigns tells him to throw that gown type thing. And then the scepter ends up getting broken over his knee, thrown out outside of the ring. And Roman starts to stomp on the gown. It doesn't seem like Xavier Woods is bothered by this, but I will say, I don't know if you guys noticed this, but and I don't think it was planned or anything like that. Like he literally could have just put in eye drops before he walked out there or something like that. But did you guys notice like that Xavier had a couple tears running down the side of his face while he was giving this promo and during the segment while the camera was shining on him? Just something that I noticed, and it did add to it because the camera kept showing him and you could just tell he was like really passionate right now because of what they were doing, and he was really selling how intense the situation was. And I do feel like the tear added. I don't think that it was planned. I don't think that it was, you know, meant to happen, but I will say something that I noticed, and I thought that it was a pretty good little twist on what happened here. But anyways, they don't even mention it at all. That's what makes me think that, I mean, obviously wasn't planned. But he gets in the ring to try to stop him, goes right after the Usos, and it's like a 2-on-1 advantage, as you would expect. They make him, or after they beat the hell out of him, they force him to watch Roman Reigns stomp on his crown, in which case Roman Reigns says, there's only one king around here. I don't need little toy artifacts to try to lift me up. I don't need to win the King of the Ring to tell me that I am the king. I am the king around here because I'm the head of the table, the tribal chief, universal champion, a guy who has not lost in like well over a year. I mean, a guy who hasn't been pinned or submitted. I guess we have to be very clear now because of that disqualification loss to Xavier Woods last week. I mean, that's something that I will feel like kind of will come back to bite them in the ass. The fact that they made that match so competitive towards the end and ended up making Roman Reigns lose via disqualification. But anyways, we will touch back on this stuff a little bit later in the show because Xavier Woods challenges Roman Reigns to a confrontation. He says, if Roman Reigns is man enough, he'll meet me in the ring later on tonight. And we do get that. Like I said, it will end up closing the show. But what happens next here is we get a Fatal 4-Way match. And I will say, I'm not the biggest fan of Fatal 4-Ways. I feel like it's just a little bit too much. Triple Threat, there's been enough good Triple Threat matches over my fandom. I've seen so many, like you guys know, it's very obvious. I've referenced it so many times. The main event of WrestleMania 20 is one of my favorite matches of all time. So clearly, I do enjoy a good Triple Threat match. But I feel like Fatal 4-Way is sometimes just a little bit too much. But this one, the one that they had tonight here on SmackDown, it was actually pretty good. It had Sheamus, Jinder Mahal, Ricochet, and Cesaro, and the winner earned that final spot that was vacated last week because of Sami Zayn losing to Jeff Hardy. Obviously, you guys know how that happened. One of them was going to be removed from the team. Well, now there was a vacated spot, and this Fatal 4-Way was going to determine who ended up getting that final spot on the team. And it was just a hell of a match. I mean, it was entertaining from start to finish. Sheamus does win with a bro kick on Cesaro after some assistance from Ridge Holland. But I just wanted to say that this match was a good, a nice little Fatal 4-Way match that was done well by all of the competitors. Ricochet had a nice little spot where he did like a jump to the top rope, front flip on the outside of the ring to take everybody out. I mean, he's done it several times, but it looks good every time. And hey, I will say, Pat McAfee had a little bit of a shot at the Falcon. You guys know I'm a big Pat McAfee fan. Love him to death. I'm glad that he's on SmackDown and representing the Blue brand. And he was actually, you know, trying to, you know, spin it in a positive way that, hey, SmackDown is going to beat the hell out of Monday Night Raw at Survivor Series. But he kind of, he painted in the picture that SmackDown was the Patriots and Monday Night Raw was the Atlanta Falcons. I mean, he references, you know, like NFL things that are going on. Like every week he'll make a little reference. I don't know if you guys get it. If there's ever a thing that Pat McAfee says during the week where you're like, what the hell was that? It's most likely something that either happened on his show during the week and it's like an inside joke or whatever, or he references something that's going on like in pop culture, like in sports. And he basically said, who is going to join this Patriot team and go beat the hell out of the Raw team that's basically like the Atlanta Falcons? I mean, you guys know the Falcons got their rear ends handed to them on Thursday night. We're not going to have to get into that because some of you might not even know that or care about that. But it was just one of those things like, ouch, Pat. I mean, I've defended you and I've been behind you for all these years and now you're going to turn on me like this. I can't believe that. But anyways, we do get the Fatal 4-Way match and Sheamus does win. So he's now added to the team. And I will say, I do feel a little bit better about our chances now that it's Sheamus in there. He's just a hell of a wrestler. He's big as hell. He's going to be somebody that's going to be tough to eliminate on the Monday Night Raw team. So I do feel like with how SmackDown's team looked last week, you switch out Sami Zayn for Sheamus, and I do think your chances to win go up a little bit. It's like fantasy football. If you take out one of your guys for somebody who's projected to score more points, you're going to have a little bit better chance to win. It's just kind of how it works. But we get another match here, Naomi and Aaliyah versus Shayna Baszler and Natalya. And this match is very quick, mainly because there was clearly a crooked referee in the ring. Yes, one of the female referees, she counted so fast. It was like 1, 2, 3. Like, it was as if, like, you know how Sonya Deville counted a few weeks back when she was still trying to cheat Naomi out of stuff? Well, that's exactly what happened here. It was clear that she had something to do with this official. It's like she paid her off or something. But she had a very fast count, and it costed Naomi the match. And that's how this one ended. Did not take very long or very much time out of the show. And they do touch on it just a little bit later whenever we do get to see Sonya Deville. But up next, we get another match. It's one-on-one. Dang, yeah, that's right. 3 straight matches on SmackDown. That's probably why I said this was a good pay-per-view. There was a lot of wrestling. I feel like it had a good flow to it as well. We get another match here. Jeff Hardy versus Madcap Moss. And this was Madcap Moss's singles debut. So he's never had a singles match, only tag team matches. And he does lose this one. Jeff Hardy wins with a roll-up. Drew McIntyre comes out to watch it ringside. And I think he did have a little bit to do with maybe why Madcap Moss was distracted. Maybe he got into something with Happy Corbin on the outside of the ring. This match right here was kind of all over the place. It didn't last very long either. There were some points in the show, like the previous one that I just talked about and this one, that they kind of sped through so you can get a lot of content. But there were certain points in the show that it was clear where they were dedicating their time. And one in particular was a Charlotte versus Becky package that was a well-put-together video package. I mean, you could say that for sure, but it was really informative, because if you had just started watching wrestling and you weren't watching during the years whenever Becky and Charlotte were good friends and they kind of turned into rivals and we got to watch that happen before our very eyes, then you would have been caught up. They would have highlighted all the important moments and you saved yourself years and hours of watching content. Now, you wouldn't have gotten to experience it, but nonetheless, you're at least a little bit caught up and familiar with what's going on between these two. And they just kind of show you how these two have been on a collision course. Their paths were parallel, like we said, best friends coming up through NXT, two members, one half of the Four Horsewomen, and they're just staples in the women's revolution, the evolution. They were a big part when they were in that submission sorority with Paige, and of course, that's a whole nother meeting. You really can't search that anymore. Do not search that, I will say that. But anyways, that was their faction name, and they switched it. But even without that faction that was going on with Paige and Becky Lynch, she was part of that crop that Stephanie McMahon introduced. And I didn't watch NXT even a little bit at the time. Like, I was not familiar with the product at all. She introduced Becky Lynch, Sasha Banks, and Charlotte. And it's just crazy to think about, because they do this all the time. You know, I mean, not everybody gets that type of formal introduction. Like, Stephanie McMahon comes out there and just introduces you the future of the company. I remember they went out there and they each put their finishing move on the Bella Twins, and I think it might have been Alicia Fox. That might have been when Alicia Fox was running around with the Bella Twins. I know I'm kind of taking you guys back a little bit here down memory lane, but this is whenever these three women, or at least, you know, these two that we're really talking about, but a whole crop of women's talent was introduced, and a step was taken in the right direction for the women's division. And it was actually, you know, over the next couple of years, it lasted a long time, even getting Ronda Rousey, the women's division was, you know, higher than it's ever been. But in this video package, it kind of, you know, it highlights that, and it shows you how Charlotte and Becky, it's always been these two. Like, it's always been meant to be these two, and they were always expected to collide like this, and it was meant to be in a one-on-one setting. Now, I know that Ronda Rousey was involved at WrestleMania 35 whenever they did meet at, you know, in the main event for all of the gold, but it was just weird because Charlotte was like the last minute addition of that. So that feud wasn't even like, ooh, Ronda Rousey got added into this. No, it was Charlotte who got added into it, and the whole thing was centered around Becky Lynch versus Ronda Rousey. And I do wish that we would get a more, you know, reason behind why they got in this specific one, other than just Becky Lynch coming back, her having a championship, and they were supposed to do a title exchange and it didn't go according to plan, so now they just hate each other and they want to fight. It should have been something more, you know, just this one in particular. Yeah, we know you have history, but what about this run? Because you guys have both been involved with other people. Like, you just had a thing with Bianca Belair. Charlotte has had her thing with Rhea Ripley. They've both been involved in other things, and it's like, well, now that we're both champions again, we got to do this exchange. I guess we're just expected to hate each other because it's Survivor Series. So that is one thing. I feel like this feud, I know we're getting it, and there is, you know, supposedly some real stuff behind it and some real heat where they don't like each other or whatever. I mean, you guys know what's all been going around the internet, how they've been doing their interviews and this and that, but I will say, this match could have had a little bit more to it. This match should have been built leading up to a WrestleMania one-on-one match, and it still can, but if you're giving it to us now, then I don't know. I just feel like it might mean a little bit less. But either way, these two women, they're the Rock-Austin rivalry of this generation. And I know that might seem crazy to wrap your mind around, or at least at first be able to accept it, but, I mean, it's true. When you think about two people who are both at the very height, like, they are both, like, rivaling each other, like, for who's hotter right now, you know, who has the more passionate fan base, because there is a lot of Becky Lynch fans, there is a lot of Charlotte Flair fans, and they're very vocal and very supportive. And, I mean, it's pretty clear that Charlotte is the more decorated superstar. Like, she has a lot more accomplished, her resume is more impressive, but Becky Lynch is, she's hot right now. I mean, not as hot as she's ever been. She's not like, oh my gosh, we really want to see her. But she's still, you know, she has a very, very loud fan base. And it's no debate that she is, I mean, one of the top superstars in the company right now, just men and women. She is on top right now. She's not, like I said, her and Charlotte, that's why they're doing this. They're right there. They're neck and neck, in my opinion. So on Sunday, we will see who WWE feels like has the upper hand, or at least should be positioned as the top woman in the company. But there might be a little bit of a weird finish here. Liv Morgan's kind of hanging there in the balance. I haven't been watching Raw, but I'm well aware of what is going on and how Liv Morgan has kind of been rumored to have a little bit of an impact on this match, I guess, if that's the word you want to use. She might get involved and cost Becky Lynch without costing her the championship, but she could still cost her to lose, and that sets up that rivalry. Keep an eye on Toni Storm as well, as somebody who might have a little bit of something to say about this. But we will move on here with what happened on SmackDown. And Sonya Deville announces that there's going to be a 25-man Battle Royal at Survivor Series to honor The Rock's 25-year anniversary since his debut. And this is where that referee walks up and she says, hey, did I do it right? And Sonya just plays dumb. She said, wait, what are you talking about? Like, that was stupid. That was a fast count. And you're a crooked referee. And I'm not going to associate myself with a crooked referee. So get out of here. And, I mean, it was clear that she was basically just throwing that ref under the bus. So, yeah, Sonya definitely doing her best heel work right now that she's done since she's been in this authority role. But up next, we get a tag team match, Rick Boogs and Nakamura versus Los Lotharios. And Shinsuke wins with a Kinshasa. This match wasn't long either. There's really not a whole lot to it. This was kind of one of those segments in the show that I was talking about that really didn't take up a whole lot of time. But it progressed a rivalry, and it developed things a little bit further, because last week I'm pretty sure these two teams battled and Los Lotharios got the win. Now they are tied at one win apiece, so guarantee yourself that you will see this match again probably next week on SmackDown, if not in the coming weeks for sure. We will get the rubber match and see who is going to maybe earn themselves a shot at those SmackDown Tag Team Championships once the Usos get out of this whole stage where they have to be just supportive of Roman Reigns because of how his big or how big his match is at Survivor Series. They can't really be in a program of their own. Maybe they will after Survivor Series, and I could see the winner of this team doing that, or the winning team of this program doing that. But if it's Boogs and Nakamura, I mean, do they really need to be involved in a tag team championship picture? I mean, Shinsuke Nakamura can't even defend the Intercontinental Championship. I mean, he's going to be in a match on a pay-per-view for the first time in God knows how long, but he's not going to defend the championship, and he hasn't really defended the championship in months. So, I mean, why put another one on him? We really don't even know what we're going to get with Rick Boogs. Yeah, I think they're just fine where they are. And I know that hasn't been, you know, talked about them getting a championship opportunity or anything like that. It's kind of just speculation by myself. But I kind of want to get out in front of it right now and say that I do not think that you should go that way. I think that if you are going to put one of these two teams involved in a program with the Usos, I know that they're both heels, but I just think that Los Lotharios are a team that maybe have a better chance at maybe having a meaningful tag team run. Despite the champions right now being heels, I'm not saying that the program heel versus heel would be good. There might not be, you know, a reason for them to go after the tag team champions right now. So maybe we'll see another team like the Viking Raiders emerge after this pay-per-view once we get into the wave of December heading into that day one pay-per-view. But either way, I am a big fan of the tag team division on SmackDown, and I've said that on multiple weeks. And I could see this match having a say for who gets a bump in the line for those SmackDown Tag Team Championships. Now another match here, Sasha Banks versus Shotzi Blackheart. Sonya Deville before the match tells these women, because they kind of exchange words backstage, and it's actually pretty, you know, entertaining little back and forth between the two. A couple B words are flown around. But anyways, Sonya Deville tells them, hey, you guys are going to be on the same team this weekend. I cannot have you guys at each other's throats. Sasha, you're the captain. I need you to be a leader. Pretty much stuff along those lines. And she says, I need you guys to get it all out of your system during this match. And after this match, I want you guys to shake hands so you can be on the same page this Sunday. So we will see if that actually does happen. But anyways, let's see. Sasha does injure her hand or her arm during this match because of a move by Shotzi Blackheart. And it's obviously a work, nothing like that. I don't think it's a serious injury, but they do kind of play into it a little bit during the match, because once Sasha takes control, despite having an injured arm or wrist, whatever one it is, she uses her foot to make Shotzi Blackheart tap out to the crossface. It's very impressive. It's why Sasha Banks is one of the best in the business. But after the match, like Sonya expects, and she does walk out immediately after the match like a parent, you know, kind of just staring at him at the top of the stage, just like, you know what I'm waiting for? Do it. Get it over with. And they do. They shake hands, and then Sasha immediately hits her with a backstabber. So take that for what it's worth. You know that that might end up factoring into why SmackDown's team might get screwed and end up losing this Sunday during the 5-on-5 elimination match, and I will have my quick predictions here in just a little bit once we finish the show. But like I said, the handshake went nowhere, so these two are still, without a doubt, 100% enemies. So there you go. Up next, Charlotte Flair tells Toni Storm that she is next on the list after Charlotte proves this Sunday that she is a more superior athlete and just person and wrestler in general. She's better than Becky Lynch. That's what she's going to prove on Sunday, according to her. These are words from her mouth. And Toni Storm is next on the list, and she's not going to give her a championship opportunity, but it's clear that's what Toni Storm wants. She says that directly to Kayla Braxton, and Charlotte's standing a few feet away, so she heard her say that, and she wants her championship opportunity. But Charlotte says, after I beat Becky, I will give you a match, a one-on-one match, just to basically teach you a lesson. And this is all working out according to Toni Storm's plan. That's what she says. So we'll see what happens on Sunday. She might have a little say-so. Everybody's expecting Liv Morgan to get involved, but keep an eye on Toni Storm. She might be the one who goes out there and screws over Charlotte to keep Becky as the one who will not lose. But let's see here. Up next, the very last thing here on the show, it is Xavier Woods and Roman Reigns confrontation. And Xavier Woods goes out to the ring by himself first. Well, Roman Reigns is coming out to the ring. He tells the Usos to stay backstage, and Paul Heyman is the only person who comes out with him. He wants to prove that there's a narrative around who Roman Reigns needs help or whatever. This is what Paul Heyman said earlier in the show. He said there's a narrative going around that Roman Reigns needs help or something like that, and he doesn't need help. He's a tribal chief. He needs nobody. So That's what he's trying to prove. He tells the Usos to stay back in the locker room, and he goes out there by himself, other than Paul Heyman. And then next thing you know, we see the Usos one by one get thrown, like, out of the entrance onto the stage. And it was clear what was about to happen. We hear Big E's music, and he comes out, and we get 2-on-1, Xavier Woods and Big E beating the hell out of Roman Reigns. The Usos try to get involved, but they eventually get taken out by the New Day as well. See, I call them the New Day. Anytime they're together, Woods and Big E, it comes out. Even though they weren't technically in their New Day roles, they both came out to their individual music and wearing their own gear, but still, just a little bit of habit. It's like a reflex to just call these guys the New Day. But they take out the Usos, and then Roman Reigns gets a little bit of offense, and he does hit a Superman punch on Big E, but it really doesn't matter because they continue to have this little bit of a 2-on-1. And then Roman Reigns narrowly escapes the big ending. Good thing he didn't hit that. If Big E would have successfully nailed that big ending on Roman Reigns, that match might have had to have been either postponed or canceled. I don't know if Roman Reigns would have been able to compete, just how devastating of a fall that would have been, and just an injury in general. So, good thing that Roman Reigns was able to escape the ring safely there. But, yeah, Big E, he got the last laugh here as SmackDown went off the air and Roman Reigns was walking up the ramp. They kind of had a little bit of face-off saying, yeah, I'm going to beat your ass, this and that. We'll see what actually happens on Sunday. I will get into my picks here in just a little bit, but, I mean, it's pretty clear who the favorite is in that match. I do not think that Big E is even close to on the level of a wrestler, a superstar, just anybody. Dennis asked me over the weekend, or during the week, sorry, over email, who do you think is going to be the next person to beat Roman Reigns and take this championship from him? Man, it is tough to predict. It really is. It's tough to forecast out because, to be honest, I don't know if that person's on the roster right now. And they could be. I mean, I feel like if you're forcing me to say who's on the roster capable of beating Roman Reigns and taking that championship from him, I know he just got drafted to the other show, but, I mean, it's Seth Rollins. There's a history there between the two characters where, you know, the story kind of writes itself. If Roman Reigns does do this babyface turn, I could see Seth Rollins being the guy that he dances with first because that's a money matchup. We saw him fight, I think it might have been 2016 or 2017, whichever one it was, at Money in the Bank. They had a 1-on-1 pay-per-view match. And it was advertised as, hey, this match is main event WrestleMania worthy. You know, I mean, it's one of the matches, but we know this is between two future Hall of Famers here on the roster that we have, and they don't fight very often 1-on-1. They haven't in a very long time. So if you're asking me, Seth Rollins, maybe Drew McIntyre, now that we have fans back and they probably want to give him that win, that championship win in front of people, I could see Drew McIntyre being somebody, but only if there's a good storyline behind it. We know that with Paul Heyman by Roman Reigns' side, that is just... they could have a good program and a good storyline with a broomstick. Like, they could literally be talking to ghosts, talking to nobody, and it would be entertaining. And you'd want to tune in every week to see what they were going to say. And Drew McIntyre is almost somebody who is in that same ballpark. He's a hell of a promo. He's passionate, and he gets into the stories every time he's involved in one. So I think that Roman Reigns and Drew McIntyre is just something that inevitably they're on the same show. It's going to happen at some point. And he has a chance, but, I mean, I don't know. I feel like if you're going to end this run that you have with Roman, it has to be with somebody who you're passing the torch to, somebody who you know is going to be the guy to carry the company, whether it is a heel, like say it's Roman Reigns, whenever he does eventually turn babyface, if that ever happens, he loses to a heel up-and-comer, or he continues his heel run that never turns back, and he loses to a babyface up-and-comer. So there's several routes you can go, and that's the one that I would prefer, have it be somebody young to kind of build and make that superstar. And it doesn't have to be anytime soon. Just look at the landscape of what you have coming up. Like, all right, is there anybody that we see in developmental, in NXT? Is there anybody that we see who is worthy of being that next guy? And it's hard to predict. It really is because, I mean, nobody predicted – let's see, Becky Lynch to be the woman's wrestler that she is right now. You know, she was involved in that, I mean, if you want to call it like a draft class, like I mentioned earlier, with Sasha Banks, Charlotte Flair, Bayley came in a little bit later, but still, I mean, she wasn't the one who was like projected to have a lot of success. I mean, even Alexa Bliss had a lot more championship runs than Becky Lynch did early whenever they all got called up. So Becky Lynch kind of, you know, rose and crawled up, scratched and clawed, did it the hard way to get to where she is. And that could easily happen to somebody else. You really never know Austin Theory is a guy who is very reminiscent to me to John Cena's run. I mean, early in his career, whenever he came out, he wasn't even wearing like the jean shorts yet. He was still wearing like those spandex shorts type stuff that like literally Austin Theory is wearing. I mean, just look at his build or the way he's built. And you could just tell. I mean, he's a really young dude. So he's gonna fill out a little bit. He's going to grow up. He's going to get better. So he's somebody that I feel like is young enough and good enough to maybe be that guy if he's, you know, built properly. We'll see what kind of happens and time will tell. But I really don't know, man. I wish I could give you a better answer, Dennis. That's one of the stumping questions that I've been asked is who is going to be the next person to take the title from Roman Reigns. It is very tough to predict. I do hope that eventually we do get a program between him and The Rock, though. I don't think The Rock would take that championship, but I just want to see it. That's like, you know how it was Rock versus Hulk Hogan back at WrestleMania 18? We could get something similar, like in terms of era versus era, with The Rock being the one on the other side there. And we kind of got it with John Cena. I know that, but I mean, this would be a little bit, you know, juicy in of itself because it's family. You know, it's family related. There's a little bit more to it. We know that John Cena is that next star. You know, he was that next era after The Rock. So that match needed to happen. It really did. But although I do feel like John Cena versus Stone Cold might have been a little bit better, if you're asking me just in terms of storytelling, that would have been badass. That really would have been. Now, there are some parallels clearly with The Rock and John Cena now that they've both gone that Hollywood route. And, I mean, that story kind of wrote itself. I didn't really watch wrestling at the time, but I was aware that it was going on. And I remember them saying, yeah, we're going to fight at WrestleMania like a year out. They said, yeah, we're going to be the main event at WrestleMania or something like that. And I remember thinking, damn, they're going to build that for a whole year. And even as like an uneducated wrestling fan at the time who really didn't look at it like that, I was still like, dude, that's going to be tough to do. But I mean, I guess they did it because it did happen. So anyways, let me go ahead and get in to, let's see here, the Survivor Series card. And I do believe there's what, like 7 matches, maybe something like that, 7 matches with that new Battle Royal. But I'll get in to who I think is going to win this. And I'll start with that Battle Royal. I don't really know the exact participant. Sami Zayn is really the only person who was announced. So he likely is a favorite to win. They really haven't told us anything else about who's going to be in there. Sonya Deville literally just announced it. So it's hard to predict who's going to win that. It might be stupid that I even tried. But I mean, I guess if you're making me, it's the only person who I think. But I will say, though, before I get into thinking that Sami Zayn is going to win that, they did say that his documentary is very close to being, you know, finished, or it is finished. It's been finished for months. And he's going through legal things right now. Like, they're screwing him over as like far as publishing it and let it be, you know, leaked out for people to see. So just more conspiracy stuff with Sami Zayn. We haven't seen that in a while, but it was referenced here. And I don't know. It could end up costing him this match. But he's the only person we know, and he was removed, or he's the only person we know that is in the match as of now, and he was removed from the Survivor Series team, so I could see them giving him this Battle Royal win, but I don't know. I guess we'll wait and see, and I'll touch back on it next week or something like that, even though I won't be here next week, I just remembered. But maybe on the mailbag, I'll call in if this match is like surprise, has like a surprising winner or something like that. Maybe it's a return. But anyways, let's see here. The Raw Tag Team Champions, RK-Bro versus the SmackDown Tag Team Champions, the Usos. I mean, I feel like as a tag team, RK-Bro is better. When you include Roman Reigns and the Bloodline, then yeah, they have, you know, the better package, and they might not be the ones to lose here because they want to still look dominant. But I mean, RK-Bro, just as far as like standing on its own, I do feel like they are more of a commodity than what the Usos are. So I'm going to go with RK-Bro here. But keep in mind, this could be where that relationship splits. But I really don't even know, honestly. Like I said, like you guys know, I haven't really been watching Raw. So I don't know how the relationship with RK-Bro is going right now. But I mean, from what I saw back when I was still watching Raw, they were clicking and things were looking nice there. So I will pick Raw to win that match. So that's 1-0 Monday Night Raw. Shinsuke Nakamura, United States Champion, or Intercontinental Champion, sorry, versus United States Champion Damian Priest. I'll give this one to SmackDown and the Intercontinental Champion Shinsuke Nakamura. Damian Priest has just done a character change, I'm assuming. Gosh, this right here is reminding me, or at least, you know, really making it obvious that I am not up to speed with what Raw is doing. But hey, at least I'm up to speed with what SmackDown is doing. That's my job here, is to cover Friday Night SmackDown, so I'm at least doing my part. But, I mean, I'll go with Shinsuke Nakamura. I think that, you know, just in a nutshell, Shinsuke versus Damian Priest, I would pick Shinsuke 10 times out of 10. And then whenever you factor in Rick Boogs, I just think that Shinsuke is going to get this win here against Damian Priest. Let's see here. Team Raw versus Team SmackDown, the women's elimination 5-on-5 match. Team Raw is made up of Bianca Belair, Rhea Ripley, Liv Morgan, Carmella, and Zelina Vega versus Team SmackDown, Sasha Banks, Shotzi Blackheart, Shayna Baszler, Natalya, and Toni Storm. Now let's see here. This one, I think this one's a little bit closer than the men's, but if you're asking me, just, I mean, Bianca Belair, Rhea Ripley, Liv Morgan, those are all, you know, three pretty up-and-coming superstars here, and I think that the inner rivalry that's going on there with Sasha Banks and Shotzi Blackheart might factor in a little bit there. So I'm going to go with Monday Night Raw here again. I think that Raw is going to take a 2-1 lead in the overall standings, and I think that, yeah, Raw is going to win this match. I don't know how it's going to happen. We'll see, but I think that the Sasha Banks and Shotzi thing is probably going to be what costs SmackDown, and that's just kind of my prediction. Now, moving on to the men, Seth Rollins, Finn Balor, Kevin Owens, Austin Theory, and Bobby Lashley make up Team Raw, facing off against Team SmackDown, which features Drew McIntyre, Xavier Woods, Jeff Hardy, Happy Corbin, and newly added Sheamus. Man, Raw's team is loaded again. It's hard to pick against Monday Night Raw in this match. I mean, I will say, I mean, I saw him get swept. I saw SmackDown, or I think it was SmackDown, get swept a couple of years ago, and I think that could very well happen again. So I'm going with Team Raw again. I think that Raw is going to win this one. Their roster and their team in particular is just stacked. I mean, I know that Drew McIntyre is nice on Team SmackDown. Sheamus is going to be a nice addition. But, man, when you're talking about Seth Rollins, Finn Balor, Kevin Owens, and Bobby Lashley all on the same team, and you just add in Austin Theory, who's going to get a little bit of the rub, like I talked about earlier, a young guy with some potential, this could be one of the moments that he looks back on that really he turned a corner at. But either way, I think Team Raw walks away with this one as well. This is an ugly matchup. Might be one of the more mismatches on the entire slate here. But the SmackDown Women's Champion Charlotte versus Raw Women's Champion Becky Lynch. Like I said, I feel like somebody's going to get involved here. I don't know who. But if you were just telling me, all right, one of these women has to win and one of them has to lose, nobody is going to interfere, who is going to win the match one-on-one, I got to go with Charlotte. I do. I think that Charlotte, just in terms of pure one-on-one wrestling, she has the edge over Becky Lynch. So I will give the win here to Charlotte Flair. But I know it's not going to be that black and white. It's not going to be that simple. Who's the better wrestler? No, something's going to happen here. And it's going to be an entertaining match. Like I said, one of the better ones of the entire card. And the most highly anticipated match in a pretty long time. So we'll see what happens there. Universal Champion Roman Reigns versus Big E Champion, or WWE Champion Big E. And yeah, Roman Reigns wins in a landslide. Don't really need to dive into that one. I don't think this match is going to be very, very close. And they could make it. I mean, keep in mind, Xavier Woods last week had a nice little run against Roman. So you know that Big E is going to have a nice offensive showing at some point. And there might be a couple areas where you think he might have a near fall, and you might think that he might have a chance to win, but do not be fooled. Roman Reigns is going to win this match and leave, probably close the show with SmackDown getting a win there. So what does that make it? If my predictions serve me right, Raw wins both elimination matches. SmackDown wins both of the main championship matches, and SmackDown wins the Intercontinental versus the United States, so that makes it 3-2. And then Raw wins the Raw or the tag team match, so it's 3-3. That's kind of how I picked it. I picked it splitting down the middle, and who knows, I could be way off, but I think that actually makes sense. If you want to make both brands look strong, nothing better than have some 50-50 booking, right? And make it a split there, 3-3. But that does do it for me here on the show. I do want to thank you guys for listening, taking the time out of your day, whether it's before the pay-per-view or you're just kind of catching up after, whatever it is. I hope that you all have a fantastic weekend. Hope you enjoy the Survivor Series pay-per-view. Like I said earlier in the show, I will not be here next week. I will be in Oklahoma City, but I avoided the crisis by calling the crisis. So he will be filling in for me, and you guys will have a damn good show. So I'm looking forward to that, and I hope you guys enjoy it. Walk passionately in the direction of your dreams, and I'll talk to you soon.